Last night, President Biden bid farewell to the nation in his address. Joining me by phone right now is Fox News Radio's Jared Halperin to recap that address. Jared, thanks for taking a moment.
Sure, absolutely.
So what are people saying today? How was that received?
Well, I think it was received like most farewell addresses are, right? Presidents, especially those that are handing off power to the other party, try and make their case for why they think their 4 or 8 years was effective, and usually offer a bit of a warning about what they see is coming up ahead. And for President Biden, he spent a lot of time talking about the growing influence of the very wealthy. He said that there is an oligarchy taking root, taking shape in the country. Warned about this influence to deregulate and roll back, especially on the environmental front, those types of regulations. He also harkened back to the farewell address that was given by President Dwight Eisenhower back in 1961. That is when the phrase military-industrial complex was coined. And President Biden said today his worry is of a tech-industrial complex. Again, kind of the control of social media and artificial intelligence and these types of technologies that are going to have an awful lot of influence over Americans' lives being controlled by a select few. And so I think that's what's getting the most attention here the day after, are those kind of warning signs that President Biden talked about. He did not name any names, but certainly I don't think it takes much of an imagination to think that the president was referring to folks like Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and others that are certainly starting to play a prominent role in President-elect Trump's upcoming administration.
So he kind of walked that fine line, but we're wise enough to be able to read between the lines and understand where he was directing some attention and warning.
It's a pretty short list of, I think, multi-billionaires that have
right.
a lot of influence in government.
Right. So we've seen a lot of attempt for, it appears, President Biden to kind of piece things together and create that legacy, as there has been some controversy and some unusual things in his time in office, particularly with him sort of getting kind of shoved off the ticket. Do you think he did a good job in being able to put together a case for the American people that his legacy is one that will be strong and enduring?
I think he spoke to, and it's something that I think has been a frustration of both the president and the wider administration for a long time, and that is the president believes that a lot of the gains that are made through his domestic agenda, whether you talk about the infrastructure bill that had bipartisan support, whether you talk about these new investments in manufacturing for computer chips, the Chips and Science Act that had bipartisan support, that is in its infancy. Those are projects that aren't going to kind of bloom, as the president said, blossom for many years. And so a lot of the impact and a lot of the benefits that the president would like credit for are not, there's not a lot to show for it right now. That has been a frustration, certainly, of the president, even going back to the early days of the campaign when his approval ratings on handling the economy were so low. And so you heard the president talk about that last night, say, listen, these are things that I think he said the seeds have been planted. So I think he's trying to make the case that don't judge everything from his time from now, right? Look back in 10 years or however many years it is about, you know, maybe new factories that have been built, new roads and infrastructure projects, and the impact that that's going to have long term. Doesn't help in electoral politics, but
right.
it may help from a legacy standpoint.
Right. You know, it was interesting, Jared, yesterday, you know, a reporter threw that question at him. How will history give credit for this ceasefire deal And he said, is this a joke? And then just kind of walked off. So he's getting a lot of that. It's got to be frustrating.
Well, listen, I think when you talk specifically about the ceasefire deal, I think that is a good example of how an incoming and outgoing administration work together when they need to. It is clear that the framework that is in place here for this ceasefire and hostage release deal is the exact same parameters that President Biden put forward in late May of last year. It is also true that the inclusion of Steve Witkoff, President-elect Trump's envoy to the Middle East, and the pressure campaign he was able to put on the Israelis and the other mediators probably got this over the finish line. I think there's going to be, at the end of the day, a lot of credit to go around. I think that everybody wants credit when you talk about politics. But it's a good example, right, of President Biden realizing that if this deal happens, it will be his successor who has to make sure that it gets implemented. And so making sure that the incoming administration weren't just informed of what was happening, but played a role in making it happen. They now have skin in the game to implement this, right? I think it's hard for presidents to sometimes do that, but you saw both President-elect Trump and President Biden, who I don't think are big fans of one another, certainly have a laundry list of political differences, be able to set that aside, at least as it relates to this narrow issue, to try and get a ceasefire over the finish line. We'll see how sustainable it is, but I think it's a good example of the old adage that politics stop at the water's edge. I don't know if that's true so much anymore in American politics, but this is an example, at least, of it being true in this moment in time.
You know, Jared, that's what I have kind of been thinking, is that this is something that we can really celebrate on a broader scale, because we know at the end of the day, if we really want things to happen for this country, we have to remember we're all on the same team. And in that political arena, sometimes that gets forgotten. But you're right. This is an example of them kind of coming together and putting America first. And it's sort of interesting, too, because, you know, 4 years ago, President Biden had defeated Trump. So you've got kind of that interesting dynamic that I'm sure history will focus on someday.
Well, not only that, but that was also a famously challenging, to put it mildly, transition, right? There was much of a transition. There was not as much of a sort of handoff from one administration to the next. And there were questions about whether or not President Biden would kind of extend those courtesies to the president-elect, given their past. He seems to have done so. You know, members of the teams are talking with one another. There was a big national security briefing yesterday between cabinet officials in the Biden administration and incoming cabinet officials in the Trump administration to kind of go over what's in play right now. You want that, right? There needs to, I mean, when you think about foreign crises and threats, they're not on the same political calendar as we are, right? January 20th doesn't mean anything when you talk about foreign adversaries and ongoing crises. So there has certainly been a level of cooperation, even if it's not often visible with public statements that are made between, the current and incoming presidents.
Right. You're exactly right. That's such an important thing to focus on. And, you know, as you and I are chatting, I'm thinking, you know, perhaps the fact that President Biden has been able to extend those courtesies and sort of put the past aside, that may end up being part of his legacy and something that history speaks fondly of about him.
Well, you know, obviously the president talked about wanting to restore norms when he came to office. He talks about it in sort of broader terms, grander terms, restoring the soul of the nation. History will judge whether or not he was successful in doing that. I think that it's going to be impossible to look at President Biden's legacy without questions being raised about, did he stay too long? Did he decide much later than he should have not to run for a second term? Was he, you know, he had promised to kind of be a bridge to a new generation. That obviously is not happening with this election. But to your point, I think he also has tried to stay true to how he feels about institutions. I mean, listen, this is somebody who has been in the federal government in some capacity for more than 50 years. There's an awful lot of institutional reverence in the DNA of President Biden. And so I do think that he's trying to be as true to that as he can in the final days here, even if it creates some maybe awkward or even painful moments as it relates to the president-elect.
You're exactly right. And when you think about that 50 years of service, I don't really care which side of the aisle you're on or how you feel about him politically or ideology-wise, but anybody that dedicates 50 years of service, I think that's something to applaud.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he was in the Senate at 29, elected at 29, took office at the age of 30, has been through, everybody knows, his personal history, the loss of his wife, the loss of his daughter in that car crash. Obviously, more recently, the loss of his son, Beau Biden, the legal challenges, addiction troubles with his son, Hunter. So, listen, he's somebody that certainly has had a lot of personal and private troubles and turmoil. I think sometimes he's talked about sort of diving into work to kind of be that outlet, but that'll be part of his legacy, I think, too. But generally, presidents' legacies are built out over time. You know, the approval ratings get better.
Right.
It's certainly true for a president. I mean, because there's nothing to disapprove of anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how history judges him. That being said, he is going to be the oldest person to ever leave the office of the presidency. He's not going to have, presumably, as long a runway to kind of have a post-presidency impact as somebody certainly like Jimmy Carter,
right,
or even his more recent predecessors like President Obama or President Bush, who were still relatively young when they left office. You know, President Biden is 82 years old. He will be the oldest person to leave the office of the presidency.
Exactly. You know, and there's going to be an awful lot for us to watch in the next few days as this inauguration inches closer. Fox News Radio's Jared Halperin, I certainly appreciate you taking a moment.
Take care. Thank you.
All right.